Thank you for joining us for live paranormal radio. From the paranormal to the unexplained, it all happens here.
It all happens here.
Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in our live video chat 24/7 with our live paranormal radio show hosts and other like-minded people. Live. Paranormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by Full Interaction Media. Stop by now and join the fun.
Stop by now and join the fun.
It's Raising the Vibration right here on the Live Paranormal Radio Network. I'm your host, Sheena Metal. I'm a psychic medium. I'm an interfaith minister, and I'm a 26-year talk radio host and other things. And I'm here every Tuesday at 5 o'clock Pacific time, raising the vibration, allegedly. Raising the vibration, of course, was the first outreach of a nonprofit movement of peace, love, kindness, and unity that I founded in 2016, initially to carry on my mom's teachings, both spiritual and humane, after she passed. But then it kind of took on a whole bigger thing. And it's really been for the last 4 years, 5 years, about trying to convince people to look at the positive and not the negative, and to focus on your passion and what you're doing to make the world a better place. So every week, I gather amazing folks that I love who really care about the world and are using their own unique gifts and talents to make the world a better place, even if it's just to make things a little bit lighter, with joy and happiness and art and laughter. And my guest today is certainly no exception to that. She's an extremely talented radio and television host in her own right. She is also a brilliant stand-up comic and a very dear friend. So please welcome to Raising the Vibration, the amazing Jenny McNulty. How are you, my friend? It's so good to hear your voice.
It is good to be there, here, wherever. Good to hear you too, my friend.
In the stratosphere. Exactly.
Exactly.
Welcome. I know
exactly.
That you have come out and done this show before at my last radio home, and I'm thrilled to have you here, because I think that sometimes we forget, and certainly when we were growing up and we were kids, we didn't realize, the internet I think has helped with that, that folks in the arts and the entertainment industry are oftentimes some of the biggest voices for humanitarianism, for to promote culture, they can be political voices, they can be spiritual voices, and it's nice for people to now know that it's not just we're in it to be famous, but also we're in it to make the world a better place and to use what we do to do that, right?
Right. I think in order to try to make the world a better place, you have to sort of see that it's possible. You know, you have to see that this could change. You have to see that if people just dealt with one another differently, things could be so much better. And I think if a creative person generally, and I'm not saying that, you know, people working in 9-to-5 positions aren't creative. That's not the case at all. They're very, very creative. But someone who is outside of that 9-to-5 and is always sort of in a weirder, different way of looking at things, I just think we just see more things that are there, if that makes sense.
I agree. Well, we kind of grow up artists, right? You grow up on the outside looking in. And, it's funny because I've sort of learned a lot now. My girlfriend has kids, so it's sort of like my first experience with teenagers around talking about their experiences in high school. The youngest one just finished, and how hard it is in school. And I was thinking about it the other day, how I loved high school. I had a great time. I felt like I did everything. I went to prom. I went to homecoming. I thought I had a wonderful time. I went to grad night. But honestly, I just hung out in the theater room with the nerdy kids.
Yeah.
Didn't really experience what was going on in school outside of that. So to me, it seemed great, but I guess it maybe also was a little weird, because almost everybody I knew was either in band or choir or theater, and we just kind of made our own little microcosmic world on the outside, but we didn't know we were on the outside because we seemed like we were doing all the things and having all the friends and going all the places. And I really think that's what artists are like in general, right? We sort of create a buzz around us, but the truth is we're used to being the outsiders from the get-go, right?
Yes. I mean, I never really felt like it. I had like a bunch of different friends. Like I always played sports too. So I was, because I wasn't in theater because right. I played sports. I was at the same time. So for me, and then I had some other like just, you know, kind of cliquey kids, and then just some of my other nerdy friends that I hung out with too. So I had a bunch of different groups of people that, you know, that I hung out with. And so maybe that's kind of being on the outside. I don't know. But I just think, like I said, I just think you need to see that there's a better way, an easier way, a healthier way to do things. You know, it's not always easier, I suppose, yeah. but it's, you know, in the long run it is. Because you spend so much time when you're doing it, you know, when you're fighting against yourself.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, like you said, artists, because we have that experience of maybe not having the most normal of lives. And I guess that was my point.
Yeah.
You know, I've never imagined in my life a life where I went to a job from 9 to 5 and came home and on the weekends went to Home Depot and built a deck in the backyard. Like, that's just, I think that I look at that life and I think that's fascinating. And then I look at my house and it looks like a train wreck that might be on Hoarders. And I'm like, oh, I get it. The people that have the perfect house are the people that have a life with structure and a schedule and don't know when the next gig is going to happen in 5 minutes. So I think because of that, because we've learned to survive outside of the box, right, it
yeah.
makes us
yeah, true.
Great to be voices, because we do mm-hmm. understand different lifestyles, and we understand what it's like to be the underdog, and we understand what it's like to struggle, and we understand it enables us to have this sort of 350 perspective. And I think there's also just something about artists that we're communal by nature, most of us, and we just want to help. We're always thinking, like, how can I pitch in to do that thing? And I think it's wonderful mm-hmm. now because of the internet that now everybody knows, like, you know, if I talk to my girlfriend's 17-year-old daughter, she knows, like, every pop star, every person, all the causes they're involved in. And I think that that's awesome, because I think it's awesome to know that these young people who are, you know, we see them making the gazillion dollars and the this and the that and whatever their profession is, they're also working to make the world a better place. And I think that helps people who admire them to think about, well, what am I going to do to make the world a better place?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think necessarily all the people in those positions feel they want to make the world a better place, but the ones that do, you know, I mean, you look at, it's funny because somebody was accusing Elon Musk of, you know, like he wants to try to get us to where we can travel in space or maybe make Mars a destination. But I mean, he's just very much outward looking that way. And people were giving him a really hard time because he could be, you know, using all this immense wealth that he's got to help us now. And I don't know. I think that you know, science, and I've always been into science and that kind of research, and say, you know, go for it. Yeah, send some. We learn so many things. You know, it's not that the moon rocks are all that necessarily valuable, but we learn so many things in attempting and completing and successfully doing space travel. So then, you know, but then you look at the people like Bezos or Bezos or however you say that dude's name, who mm-hmm. for all intents and purposes doesn't seem like he's doing a whole lot with the extra billions of dollars he made through this pandemic.
Right.
Where, you know, and Bill Gates on the other hand is. So I think there's all different kinds
yeah.
of people, and, you know,
yeah.
whether mm-hmm. or not creativity necessarily makes you want it to do good for others. I don't know about that, but, yeah, I, you know, more of us need to, that's for sure. And because it's so simple,
yeah.
you know, it's just treat people like you want to be treated. It's not rocket science. Just don't be a
no.
dick. Wouldn't want them doing to you.
And
exactly.
conversely,
and you know,
thing,
you
yeah.
see somebody drop a $20 bill, you tap them on the shoulder, go, dude, you dropped a $20 bill, because you would want someone to do that for you. You know, it's
right.
just
yeah.
simple.
Right. It's the golden rule, right? I mean, it comes back to
yeah,
that always.
Yeah.
It's that's what it is. And it's and,
right.
and nobody is saying if you make money, you have to give it all away or you have to give a lot to charity.
No.
But nor is anybody
no.
saying it's bad to make money, because if you make a lot of money and you want to give a lot of it away, then fantastic. By all means, please make more money.
Right.
I just
yeah.
think that it's, you have to think about, you know, what is the thing that you're doing? And even if the thing that you're doing is you just employ a lot of people with your company, or the thing that you're doing is you're just kind to people. You treat people well.
Right.
I mean, that can be enough
yeah.
of your thing. Your thing doesn't have to be undertaking something like Bill Gates is doing. It can just be,
right.
like you said, just be a nice person. Just think of ways
yeah.
to be kind to people around you. And I talk about
mm-hmm.
this a lot in my spiritual work, that if all of us just got 5% kinder immediately, the tsunami of change in the world would just blow everybody away. And what is really 5% more kind in your day? It's a couple extra pleases and thank yous, open a door for somebody, you know, wear your mask and live your life.
Right.
But it's so little. But if we all just did it, the change that would happen, and nobody would be making a big sacrifice. Nobody's telling you to give up all your earthly pleasures and put a dollar in your shoe and go pick oranges. You know, all anybody's saying is just try to be a little bit nicer and let's change the world. And I think that something about the last, 5 years or so, it's almost like people have really gone to their camps, right? And you really see the difference between the people who are kind and the people who are not. And kind and not kind look like everybody. They're not gender associated. They're not ethnically associated. They're not, sexuality associated. They're not politically associated. There's just kind of kind and not kind all across the board.
Right. Yeah. Totally.
So be the kind person.
Totally.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, are these things that you, when you first started performing, I mean, were these things that you ever thought about? I mean, when did you realize that what you do as an entertainer is actually, from a spiritual perspective, bringing light to the world?
I don't know. It's such a,
people come up to me.
Exactly. There we go. People come up to you all the time, especially in comedy. You know, hey, thanks, man. I was having a really crappy day. You really made me laugh. I really appreciated what you did. But for us, it's more of, at least for me, I can't speak for all comics, but, we get a lot out of that, too. It's very satisfying to go up there and make a room full of people laugh. So I almost feel a little bit guilty saying that what I do brings joy to the world. It's kind of like a benefit, it's just sort of it's a happy accident kind of that it brings joy, because it brings me such joy to do what I'm doing. On the other hand, that being said, I try to be in those things that I say, because there's that too. You can make people laugh a million different ways, and I try to make the ways that I use to make people laugh be more positive. I try not to beat up on people, the Kardashian, because, you gotta. But for the most part, I try to be mean spirited humor,
So a Kardashian or two takes one for the team, that's life.
Right, exactly. But, for the most part, I try not to make it be a mean-spirited humor. So in that sense, Because you can laugh at, I'm not saying that negative humor isn't funny, but it's just not for me. It just doesn't help me any. And I think we all have to do, as artists, we have to do what resonates with us and what, because if we're feeling good about what we're doing, then it comes out, even if it's, even if it's in comedy where you're having just a horrible, horrible day or a horrible time in your life and you try to find humor in there, there's something healing about that for writing that material too. So it's very much a mutual benefit for what we do. At least for comedians.
Yeah, it's funny because I have a friend who always says when you give a healing, you get a healing. And when people come up to me now that I've, kind of gone a little crazy with my life and gone off the spiritual deep end, and they're like, oh, when did you know you were a healer? And I think, well, I always knew I was a healer. I just thought I did it through art. And now I do it differently. Now I actually call it that. I used to stuff it down underneath. It's like my life flipped. Like, when Madonna wore her underwear on the outside for that tour, it used to be my spirituality kind of ran the show and I was an artist. Now my spirituality is more up front and my art is underneath, but it's all kind of the same thing. And the channel and the messages when you write and create come from the same place anyhow. So it's really not any different. And I do think you change people's lives. And at the same time, it changes your life. And, the negative stuff, I worked for almost a decade on what was at that time the Howard Stern affiliate in Los Angeles. And my job was people would call up, and my job was to not knowing at the time I was a psychic, right? The big surprise to me. I would suss up who they were in 30 seconds, listen to their story, make a joke out of it, hang up, and go to the next one. And sometimes take 70 calls in a night. And after years and years of that, I started to feel toxic all the time. like on a cellular level. And I would sit in a coffee shop with friends and look at people around me, and they all just seem like cases, like, oh, that one's in the closet and that one cheats. And it just didn't seem, it didn't make me feel good, you know? And I think it probably is that way when you do negative comedy over and over and over again in your life. After a while, you just, people become like material, and it just doesn't feel good anymore. And maybe it does to some people that don't very much want to be, have goodness inside of them. But to me, it didn't make me feel good. And I think that's why even during that time, which is when I started doing stand-up, my comedy was never negative, because it's mm-hmm. just was like, it's enough, you know? It's easy to go down that road, right? It's a nastiness is like a cheap laugh.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. It's easy, and a lot of it is like, can be a shock humor, like, oh my God, I can't believe they just said that about that person. Oh, and then they're laughing, not at any sort of witticism, but just at a cut down. I mean, we lived 4 years of that with him, you know, and and it was just one constant name calling, childish, you know, and you see where we got spiritually. We were divided country now, not that we weren't before, but it certainly feels worse.
Yeah,
I mean,
well,
like there are a lot of people. That being said, there are a lot of people now, you know, really trying to turn things back around again. And maybe that was just the deep dive into crapville that we needed to go to, you know, pull ourselves back out of this and go, hey, wait a minute, we can, because we have to not only being mean to each other, but, you know, we have to look at the way we're dealing with our animals on the planet, and we're dealing with everything. So we've just really got to, you know, wake up. We can't just keep pushing this down the road to future generations, or there won't be any.
Right. There'll be no planet left, and we better
hope
Elon Musk asks
like
us to get on the
comic?
Ship.
Yeah, right.
When you're with me. Because I let you talk about this stuff. You don't just have to make jokes, because I think people want to know what's inside there. I think with any performer, we really now want to know what makes people tick. And a lot of comics are very deep and very dark, because a job of a comic, right, is to sort of assess life around you and find a way to bring it to the stage with some irony and humor. And it's a, you know, you just naturally are somebody who watches people and assesses them. That's the job, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and you know, you can either, you know, like kind of make that be your focus. Like for me, a good example, like I'm doing the talk show that I do during the day, and for, you know, I started it when the pandemic hit, and you know, Trump was all in the news, and there were a lot of jokes about Trump. Well, my partner, who, you know, she was working for a while, and then when her job went away as well, she took up, because she does production, so she was helping me with my show and that, and you know, and she kept just getting saying, please just quit talking about him, quit giving him that time, quit, you know, everything about him is so negative. But it was almost like I felt I had to touch on it, because some of it was just so, you know, who the hell suggests injecting light into your skin or drinking bleach, you know? It's like some of those things just I had to touch on. And what I've noticed, and she just kept saying, please, you know, don't do that. And then like in the third part of my show, she's like, if you're going to do it, at least just keep it in the monologue part and keep the rest of your show positive if that's what you're trying to do. So I really thank her for that and for keeping it. And what I've noticed is now I'm trying to kind of not do much politics stuff at all. And the other day I had something on, the TV was on, something was going on, and they were talking about something, and it was sort of in the background, but I was listening to it enough that I felt myself getting wound up again and getting like anxious again. And I thought, holy crap, that's what that does to you. You know, that sort of angst for me, that's what it does for me. Comedy is supposed to be tragedy plus time. So if you look at, you say that some comics are very dark, it's because they've had really sort of tragic upbringings, and they use that comedy as a crutch for them, as a weapon for them to get themselves through those hard times. So that's kind of the angle that their humor has always been. It's been the way they go about their life. It's the way they process the world. And so that's how they bring that humor to us. And so many of us have had messed up things happen to us that when we see that, we can appreciate that sort of humor. I tease my mother all the time. I'm like, what the hell did you give me such a happy childhood? I got good grades, went to a good school, had a lot of friends. How the hell am I supposed to make a career out of that? But for me then, that's not where I go. I don't go to dark places and try to make them happy. I mean, I try to make things happy, but I, you know, I'm just really, really glad he's gone. And now he could just, you know, focus on the regular old flipping on banana peels kind of stuff. Not that kind of humor, but, you know.
I think it was just an important thing. Look, I believe everything happens for a reason, even the pandemic, because I'm that crazy woo-woo person. But I think that, like for instance, when I speak at my spiritual services, I always talk about how, since the pandemic, that the purpose of the pandemic, right, is for once all of us in the entire world are having the exact same situation at the same time, and we all have a common enemy, which is the virus. So somebody in Africa, somebody in India, somebody in Chile, somebody in California, all of us, and yes, I realize California is not a country, although there are those who would like it to be, all of us realize that we all are very much the same. We're all human. We've got the same bodies. We're all susceptible to this thing. We've all lost people. It makes us all sad. What a fantastic global leveler. So I believe in this country and also in the world, because what happens in this country for whatever reason affects the world. What happened politically with us for that 4 years was people really realized what narcissism looks like. And it's a problem in humanity. The narcissists, right, are a problem. And for one to suddenly become so viscerally public and in everybody's face, suddenly it was like, oh, yeah, that's like my boss, or that's like my brother-in-law, or that's right. The idiot I'm married to and can't get away from, or, you know, that's the crazy neighbor lady. And for once, I think everybody realized, oh, that's what it looks like. That's what's wrong with my marriage. That's what's wrong with this friendship. That's what's wrong with the neighborhood. And I think in a way that was a good thing, because hopefully people are learning and realizing the difference in what that looks like, and the new administration, and however you fall politically and whatever you believe in, you have to say that it's the difference in a very narcissistic person and a very empathic person. And to see the difference in those two things, maybe we needed to look at that on television in real time and see, oh, because, you know, pick a side. What do you want to be in your life? Do you want to be somebody who cares about other people and feels other people and is good, or do you want to be a people person who only cares about themselves and sits on a 24 karat gold toilet and thinks of ways to ruin everybody's lives? Yeah. You know, and that's not a political thing, because that's a problem that we had with our former president before he was ever a politician. So there are people who are just like that. And if the only thing that's going to really change the world is for all of us to like away from them. But people are so scared to do that because we're all scared of bullies, right? And that's a shame.
Yeah.
But it also and in the entertainment business, right? How many times have we been bullied by some weirdo who just felt like they needed to give their opinion or give us out of jealousy, not put us on some bill or tell us some weird thing to make us feel bad about ourselves? And you know, I don't know about you, but as a young artist, I believe that stuff, and it affected who I was.
Well, you know, I did. I started comedy later too. You know what I mean? I was how old was I? I think 27 when I started doing comedy. So I was a little bit older and, you know, more, I don't know, whatever. And I don't know, but yeah, you know, I think that, you know, my mom always used to say, you know, being depressed is easy. So if you look at, and it is kind of, it's easier to look at the negative side. If you want to find something negative, you can. Sometimes it's harder to find positive in things than negative. And where we are now, or where we have to go now, is we need to start looking at the positives in others and looking at, you know, stop judging people and being so harsh with people. I find myself doing it all the time, you know, and it's, just we all need to kind of take a step back and chill for a minute, because that's where we got to, like, to the point where now, like, if I see somebody in a red hat, I'm like, oh, you have that weird, like you said, sort of visceral reaction to it. And we can't. We have to come to, you know, an acceptance of some kind and just go, okay, we need to all move on here. And
And again, go for positive and just keep putting positive people where they need to be. You know what I mean? And letting positive people
right.
shine. So if you just kind of go, all right, if we, you know, we have these people, whether it's a political office or whether it's your workspace or whether it's wherever, and people's workspaces are all going to be different now. People are working from home. So I think it, in some ways, mm-hmm. like you were saying, in terms of the pandemic, it is a good chance for a reset. It's a good chance to go, hey, you know, what am I doing now? How do I move forward better for me in whatever way that means, you know? And then moving
right,
better for
right.
yourself, you move better for everyone.
Right. It's a new opportunity for all of us. I hate to be like rah, 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 the pandemic, because it certainly is not who I am, but look at how many people have started the passion project that they wish they'd always done and thought they
right.
couldn't do or didn't have time to do. I mean, you included, right? I mean, look at, I don't know that if it had been for the pandemic, if I hadn't have had the guts to leave where I was and move to a radio place that makes me much happier. You know, we
mm-hmm.
tend to get stuck in our ways, and we tend to, especially in the entertainment industry, right, because we're all raised with that attitude of, well, you know, you have to take what you can get or you'll never work again, which we were all told as young people. So
yeah.
There's a fear to ever leave anything, even if you know something is no longer working for you. The pandemic kind of just, I tell all my clients all the time, now is the time for you to have spend the time in your head and figure out what you want your life to be when the world opens again, and do it, because, you know, we've had the time to create the thing or clean the thing or get the edge, study the thing or, you know, whatever it is to do your
mm-hmm.
thing.
And, you know,
now's the time.
Hold space for people, too, that didn't, you know what I mean? Because it's like for people that were just in the pandemic, sort of stuck there, that didn't create a passion project or didn't write a book or didn't do anything,
sure.
I think they look around and go, wow, I didn't do anything in this year. And I think that's nothing wrong with that either. You know what I mean? People,
yeah.
You know, like I said, I just think we need to quit judging everyone so harshly and just quit judging, period.
Right.
Just
yes.
sort of
yes.
like let it go, you know?
Yeah. And encourage people not to be so hard on themselves. I told a friend a couple nights ago, it's like, I didn't do all the things I wanted to do, just like you said, during the pandemic. And I'm like, man, you got out of the toxic place you were living. You got into a good place to live. You worked through the pandemic, probably making more money than you've ever made in your life. So that's something.
Yeah.
Look, two great
yeah.
things. You know, we need to realize in life that we need to be so thankful for every little thing, and if you're looking for things that suck about your life, you'll find them.
Yeah,
so
right.
why go
uh-huh.
looking for them, right? Why not,
yeah.
you know, relish the things that are awesome. It doesn't mean you have to be blind to the things you want to change, but to constantly focus on, I tell this story all the time. I had a friend, we went to lunch. And she, you know, had been on a television show, worked all the time, very good looking, you know, lovely, happy. And we go out to lunch and she starts talking about how miserably depressed she is. And I said, well, and young, you know, probably 10 years younger than me. And at the time, I was probably 10 years younger than I am now or so.
Okay.
You know, she was probably 30 and I was 40. And I said, well, why are you upset? And she's like, I just am so miserable because I haven't gotten my Oscar, my Grammy, my Tony, and my Emmy yet. And it was hard not to laugh. I love her, but I was thinking,
uh-huh.
really? Everything that you have, and now it's that? Now we can't be happy till we have that?
Yeah.
I just think that we look for reasons to, there's always some other thing we don't have. But
mm-hmm.
what about what we do have and how great that is, you know?
Right.
And
yeah.
like finding somebody that you love or working someplace that makes you not want to kill yourself or having some really great friends that you wouldn't trade for anything. I mean, to me, these things are way more important than when I get my Grammy and my Tony and my Emmy and, you know,
yeah.
for some people, no level of success is enough. No,
yeah.
no amount
yeah.
of money is enough.
Uh-huh.
No amount of friends is enough. When do you stop
yeah.
and just say, I just want to be happy? And just,
yeah.
you know, that's what I love about you is that you always seem like you're just in a cool place. And I'm sure that's not true all the time. I'm sure you have a great poker
yeah.
face. But you're always doing stuff. You're always creating stuff. I mean, I've known you, what, 20 years? And you're always
probably, yeah.
finding ways to create stuff for yourself and to just seem happy. I mean, sometimes just being happy really is enough.
It's, you know, I'm actually sitting in my car right now with a flat rear rough tire.
Oh, no.
I know.
Oh, my goodness.
I went to get my shot, and as I was coming out of the, I got it at Dodger Stadium because I voted with the Rams, and now I'm getting my shots with the Dodgers. But I was coming out of there, and my tire hit something, and I hear this, and I'm like, oh, shit. I just kind of pulled over. I'm just sort of sitting here waiting. But that being said, I thought, you know what? I could go, all right, this is just a crappy thing. We found out today we've got to move, literally. So I'm just like, oh, my God, what a horrible day. And I thought, yeah, but you know what? I just happened to renew my AAA in February, so now I can call the guy and have my car fixed. So it's like,
And it happened after you got vaccinated and not before.
True, right, exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
You got the vaccine before the flat tire.
Exactly. So, stuff happens and you just got to keep, and then, you know, what I found too is just reaching out for help for people, because a lot of times, you know, you can't always be positive, you can't always be upbeat, and that's when the times you just reach out to someone, even if you don't know what to ask. I remember when I was having trouble in calculus once, I went in and asked the teacher after class, and he's like, what's your problem? And I said, I don't even know where to be. I am so lost right now. And I was a good student, so this was not a new thing for me. And I'm like, I don't even know where to start with this. And he was just really cool in the way he handled that. And sometimes you just got to go to someone and go, I don't know what I need. I just know that I don't feel good, and I need to talk to someone that does. I need to talk to you because you're a friend of mine, and you've cheered me up. And it can make a difference. Sometimes just hearing yourself say things, you know, and you're like, okay.
I agree.
That's not the right way to look at, you know. So that's what I love about masks, Sheena, is because I talk to myself all the time. So now I can talk away, and I don't have to worry about it. No one can see.
Right. Isn't that great? Yeah, that's fantastic. Except it's weird now if you have, because now people hear the mumbling. Like if I'm on the phone and they don't see the headphones because I've got my wireless in, and they hear the mumbling and they think, oh, what's, they give me the strange look. And I'm trying to like do the miming of phone up to the ear and mouth. Like I'm on the phone, except I don't think young people know what that means because the phone didn't look like that then. I have to make like a rectangle. I'm on the rectangle.
But I
do talk to myself, especially in the car, because I don't wear the mask in the car. I don't really understand wearing the mask in the car, so people can still think that I'm crazy, apparently.
No.
And I dance, and I have occasionally banged the dashboard along with the beat of the song, so I think people who ride up next to me probably think I'm a lunatic, but it just feels good sometimes, because, you know, when you're working all the time, when you're always performing, when you're always doing something, the car is like your blissful alone time. That's my time kind of just to be alone. I remember about in 2014, I went to Sedona. My friends had a conference there, and they asked me to come, a spiritual conference. And everybody was like, oh, are you going to fly? And I'm like, I'm going to drive and spend 9 hours by myself in the car. And it was the most amazing thing. It was like I took myself out on a romantic weekend trip, just me. because, you know, we're always around people. And I think that's been strange. Has that been strange for you during this pandemic to not be around people? Because whether we like it or not, right, we get charged up by other people. And to not have people around, it's been strange.
Well, I don't know about that. Because for me, and I've also gotten to see a lot of friends, and it's only through the internet, but I've been interviewing people that way since this thing started.
And me too, yeah.
And spending time with people that way and doing the game show thing where we get six of us together at one time, all kind of hanging out. So I've had that sort of kind of camaraderie. But the interesting thing is most of the people that I'm interviewing are like my comedy pals or my acting pals. And I would say, Sheena, 80% of them, at least 80%, have said that they're kind of an introvert and that this really hasn't been that hard staying in the house and doing things. I mean, we certainly miss the thrill of the crowds and being there performing in front of them. But but I think a lot of performers can be a bit introverted. I think I am.
Yeah, I am too.
I mean, it's not that I don't like going to parties and stuff like that, but when I come home, I do feel more tired than energized. Whereas my sister's the exact opposite.
Me too.
She's a total extrovert.
Yeah.
She goes to a party and she's just, she'll go to 12 parties a night and is all jazzed up.
I mean, not even like drinking a party. She just likes being out with people. So, you know, everybody's a little bit.
I don't think I've spent this much time by myself since I was 14, that I've had this much time in the house. And I love it because I needed it. I didn't realize how badly I needed a year to have downtime and reset and still be able to work. So I didn't have to feel like I was flaking, but at the same time, I didn't have to be at the five parties a night. But I do know that it took me years and decades to train myself to be around people. And then when people were suddenly gone, it was strange. So, I mean, it has been very strange not to be sort of in the swing of not to have all those things happening. It's not like I'm not upset or resentful of it. I guess I kind of feel guilty that in a lot of ways I kind of liked it. But it is strange not to have your life so radically change, I mean, almost virtually overnight. And and for me, my radio outlet changed. I got in a new relationship like, I don't know, 3 weeks before the pandemic started. So everything in my life shifted at once. And so it's been a little bit of a, it makes me wonder what's going to happen when the world opens up again and how is it really going to go back? And are people going to have big parties again? Will there be big events? Are we all just going to kind of be chill for a little while, which I don't think is such a bad idea.
I think it's an excellent idea, but I don't think it's going to happen. I mean, there were 38,000 people at a baseball game last night in Texas. And granted, this is in Texas.
Yeah.
But still, we don't have the attention span for a year-long pandemic. We only have the attention span for a day-long pandemic. So we want this to be done. We're tired of it. I don't want to wear a mask anymore. That's just awful. So I think this could be, you know, we'll see. I mean, hopefully more people will get vaccinated and we can get rid of this thing. Someone was telling me that the flu was actually down this year because people were wearing masks more. So, you know, if we can learn something from this, although, like I said, 38,000 people at a game last night leads me to believe that not too many people are on board with it. They want it to be over. They don't, we're a little spoiled here, I think. And, you know, we don't want to have to be doing this. We don't have to wear masks and wash our hands and get a shot.
So those are all huge inconveniences in one's life. Compared
aren't
to what
they though? Aren't
someone.
They?
I know. Washing my hands.
I know. The last pandemic, there were outhouses. So just chill. You don't have it that bad.
Yeah. And no air conditioning. And people were walking around with those masks, carrying their parasols in the 100-degree heat, the long dress, and there was no air conditioning. So this is like the cakest pandemic ever. And I really think as long as I had a toilet, air conditioning, and Wi-Fi, that I could probably pandemic for another year and be okay. When those things disappear, that's a deal breaker. I could sleep on the floor if there was Wi-Fi and air conditioning. But, it's going to be a shame. I think people are going to be starved to go out and see live entertainment again. I think it's going to be wonderful for everybody in the entertainment business because I think everything's going to come back and flourish.
So I sure hope so. I think a lot of people are going to have... I've got a show in May. I used to do a show every month. In fact, it was the longest running monthly show at the Ventura Harbor Comedy Club. It was the Rainbow Night there. And, of course, we stopped it.
Nice.
Actually, we stopped it in March. We think we had one in February. We were supposed to do one in March, but I think there was fires or something closed around. I forget what was going on, but we ended up canceling that show, and then it got canceled for good. And we're coming back again in May, but only at 50% capacity. And, you know, some of the comics that I'm talking to are a little bit nervous. Most of them are really eager to get back out there. I mean, if only for the work, eager to get back out there. But I don't know that everyone – I think in a way we're starved for it, but I think people are still going to be a little hesitant. Maybe the vaccinated ones won't. I don't know.
Yeah, I think the vaccines changed the game. When we were starting to open up again in the fall, when they started to open some things again in the fall before the second lockdown, I teach at a place in Agora, and they asked me to come out and do a work. I just started doing workshops for them, and during my second one, the pandemic hit, and we had to cancel it. So we tried to reboot it in October, and honestly, nobody wanted to come. Nobody wanted to come out. Whereas I'm teaching my webinars online and doing great, but nobody wanted to come out and I had to cancel it. So they've kind of been like, hey, when are you coming back? When are you coming back? And I'm like, you know what? Not until people are okay about going out. So if your show is good in May, I will go back there in June. But I just think people are still very leery of going out.
Yeah.
But then down at the beach here, you know, in Orange County, which tends to be a lot more politically conservative and nobody gives a fuck, People are like, you know, hanging all over each other, drinking together, not wearing masks. Nobody cares. But then I go to L.A., and I think a lot of my Orange County friends don't believe. I go to L.A., and it's like crickets. I see no one but the cat. I mean, they close my pool. Mm-hmm. The hot tub's closed. You know, the neighbors don't come out. I mean, it's a whole different thing. And so it'll be interesting to see now that everybody's starting to get vaccinated. And we'll have a lot of vaccines behind us by the time that show in May. People need to get out. And you guys all need to get on stage. I mean, I think that's, you know. Is that going to be your first time out since the pandemic?
It will. My first time in live, yeah. My last show was March 7th of last year in Fort Lauderdale, and then this will be my first time back on stage, May 13th, I think it is.
Wow.
Crazy. Wow. I mean, I've been doing like a little mini monologue with my show every day, but it's different than like actually hearing people laugh. Right now, I'm just assuming every single joke I tell is amazing and everyone laughs at it.
They're all
killing. It's going to be,
I'll
be like, hey.
They killed in my bedroom. What's wrong with you people?
Exactly. In my mind, it was hilarious.
You talked earlier about how we take care of our animals. Are you still vegan?
I am, yes.
Okay.
I quit eating red meat way back in the 80s because of all the health stuff, right? And so I just had chicken and turkey and some fish. I'm not a big, didn't really like a lot of fish. And then late 2000s, I think, or early 2000s, I heard about how they de-beak the chickens, and it wasn't so much that they cut their beaks off, but it was so that they wouldn't peck each other to death because they were kept in small. And it just felt like so awful.
Right.
And then what I thought the main thing, and this sounds, well, not to you, but to some people it sounds silly, but the way that they slaughter them, chickens are completely awake and alive till their heads lopped off. And it's not like they're in line hanging upside down going, oh dear, I'm about to be turned into a McNugget. They're just knowing something is going on. They're smelling the blood. They know something is off. They're, you know what I mean? So I feel like those animals have to be riddled with fear right before the moment of their death. And then you're consuming that meat and you're taking in all of that terror. So all of those things combined made me give up turkey and chicken, but I still had some fish because, as I used to joke, I hadn't developed empathy for fish yet. And I didn't really know about, you know, dairy and eggs and stuff. So then I was doing a show for a friend of mine in P-Town. She calls and she said, hey, I've got this organization that I work for, and we're doing a retreat in Florida. Would you come be the comic for it? It's for a bunch of vegans. I'm like, oh, yeah, that'd be great. Sure. I said, I'm almost there. I'm, you know, kind of eat this. So she goes, and I was there, and there were really cool people. And she was like, you really should do this, because what they do is they go into schools and they talk about a plant-based diet is more healthy, by the environmental concerns about, you know, concerns for the animals, of course, too, but mainly the health concerns and the environmental concerns are the thrust of this organization and just trying to get a plant-based message out there. It's just, you know. So she's like, you should do this when you're not on the road. You could go into schools and speak and colleges and speak and whatever. And I'm like, oh, okay, maybe I could do that. You know, like eliminate some of those one-nighters in Bakersfield. Sure, that sounds good. I could stay in town and work on other stuff. So I started doing that. And when I learned about, I said, but would I have to be completely vegan? And she said, yes. So the training for that thing was in July, and this was December. So I'm like, I'll tell you what, I'll try to go vegan between now and July. And if I can't do it, then I won't do it. And if I can, I'll join the group. So it was actually, for me, really easy because I was already, most of it was gone anyway. The cheese was hard, not gonna lie. I didn't eat eggs that often, so it really wasn't that much of a switch for me. And so I went and I started training with this, and I just learned about, you know, the environment and what we're doing to the planet and how, you know, we literally just cannot continue to eat like this. There's not enough room on the planet to grow the grains to feed the animals. And then over and above the horrific things that those animals experience. So for me, like, you know, I went there initially because of, you know, like animal rights kind of things. And then when I learned about all the environmental, you know, things, I'm like, oh no, we just have to stop this. And you don't have to. There's a dude called Earthling Ed, and he's from England, and he's got like a, he's like an activist, and he's always putting out YouTube videos, and he's written books and stuff. And he's really cool, and he's very level-headed, and he will like listen to people and just go, okay, so taste. What it comes down to for everybody is taste. I don't want to give up meat. I don't want to give up this because I want to give up that taste. But we don't have to.
and your taste buds will change if you start eating these other things. So for me, it was just super, super simple switch. And like I said, when I learned about the environmental things, I'm like, this Ed guy said, you know, is the taste that important to you? And it just, the taste of the meat was not important enough to me to do those horrible things to the animals and to the, you know, planet we're living on. So that was why
I agree.
Made the vegan jump.
But do people kind of, I mean, is there a shaming for vegans? I mean, do people go on? Because I remember when we first talked about, when you came on my show the first time and talked about it, you talked about being like, you say plant-based instead of vegan.
Right.
Is it, I mean, do people think like, oh, vegans aren't funny? Like you just wander around all the time, you know, wearing a burlap sack and condemning people.
Exactly. No, I mean, we've got a whole, that's that as a joke I do. I'm like, there's one group of people that have a worse reputation for a crabby sense of humor than lesbians. It's vegans, and I'm both. So I'm like,
exactly,
no one would ever come to my comedy
that's
show.
That's it. Not funny. Definitely not funny.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. But so it is why I say plant-based. Also because I'm not, you know, like, I have a leather coat I got 20 years ago. I'm not going to throw it away. And then some people would shake their finger at me and say, well, you're advocating leather by wearing that coat. And I don't want to get that into it. I feel like the statements that I make with my food choices and speaking out when I do and trying to make comments on, you know, I'm doing what I can. You could never do everything. You could never do all of that.
Right.
And you have to do the level that you feel comfortable with. And if you feel comfortable with not wearing any clothes and not making, you know, making sure, you know, I don't even wear that much makeup, but, you know, going through all that, those are all wonderful, great things. But there's just, you know, so much that I feel comfortable with. And
right.
For that definition, plant-based is more true than what vegan is. And there's the whole vegan stigma. But honestly, it's not as bad as it is, especially here in California. You know, if I were to go in the middle of the country somewhere. But,
no. Yeah. I know a lot of people that have gone plant-based just because I think about it. I think about it.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
Like literally sitting right now with my damn flat tire. I'm looking at a food truck. It's plant-powered fast food. It's plant-based food truck sitting right in front of, and I'm in the, you know, right outside of Dodger Stadium. So it's everywhere now. And the pandemic has also, when the food shortages happened because of all the COVID problems with the meatpacking places and the meat, I don't know how to say meat processing. It's processing dinner. It's not slaughtering the animal and taking a living creature and walking
it
through and wrapping them out in cellophane. It's processing.
Exactly.
But
I just processed your beak off of you. Just
processed
you away from your beak.
Exactly. You didn't need those silly old bones on your body anymore. So a lot of people are increasing the intake of plant-based foods, and a lot of companies, like I'm in a couple different websites, especially in the UK, and they're a little bit farther ahead of us. A lot of UK companies have said that, like, I think it's UK Burger King intends to be, 50% plant-based by like 2030 or 2050 or something like that, or like a huge number, which for a Burger King, that's a big thing.
Yeah.
To have a,
well, here's the thing about burgers. I mean, really, when you put ketchup and mustard and pickles on something, it doesn't matter what it is. It tastes like a burger. And you char it, that's all that matters. All it tastes like is really ketchup, mustard, pickles, and char at that point anyhow. So I don't notice.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? I mean, if I dress it up like that, I don't notice the difference in a burger and an Impossible or Beyond or anything at all. Because mostly what I like is I like the char and the condiments. And I've really stepped away from gluten because I noticed it was not making me happy.
Mm-hmm.
So the only thing more humorless than a vegan is a gluten-free person. But I find now that, you know, I don't really care about the bun. Like, I don't need to have that. I'm not attached to it. And I think a lot of things we just get attached to because we think we're supposed to be attached to them. And almost every place now, like crazy places like Chick-fil-A, Shake Shack, places you'd never think of, will do a lettuce wrap for you. And and so I pretty much just everywhere I go, I wrap it in lettuce and I get extra lettuce and I tell myself I'm getting a free salad, which makes me very happy. And and then I move on with my life. But I can't become that person that panics about what's in the food and the GMOs and what's in my this and what, because honestly, I'll sit up all night long freaking out about it. And at some point you just need to, like, you can't fret about the leather coat from 20 years ago because that cow has already probably been reincarnated 10 times. And it's, you know what I mean? It no longer cares that you have its earthly shell from 20 years ago, and so enjoy
it. Yeah, exactly, exactly. But it's, you know, it's
That's
and
great.
It's to each his own. It's like I said, for me it was easy because for me I never liked cream sauces or any of those things. So those things are easy for me to give up. And like you, condiments are what I miss most. I realized it was mainly ketchup and barbecue sauce that, you know, if you put that on a veggie burger,
yeah.
it was the same for me. So for me, it wasn't that
it tastes exactly
that
the same.
Big a deal.
And I love this. I love the taste of the charring. I love the taste
mm-hmm.
of the grill. And so I would
yeah.
just, I could just put a little ketchup on a charcoal lump and I'd really be fine. That's all I need. It's all about the experience of the charring for me. So it doesn't matter to me. And I think eventually, probably I will go in that direction. I am very attached to chicken. I'm very sorry that somewhere there are chickens being forced to legally separate from their beaks. But, I mean.
Well, they're the ones providing
they
eggs.
Also,
so.
Right.
Those
they
are
also
the egg
make
layers.
The Beyond Chicken, right? They Or they're going to.
Right.
I mean, I know, like, Veggie Grill has a
mm-hmm.
good chicken burger, but. Chicken-esque or almost chicken or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I can see myself going in that direction. So you've made
well,
vegan funny.
Like, like I say to people, you know, at one point in your life, you ate mashed up food and Cheerios. So your taste buds will adapt.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it's that way with sugar. All the times I've quit sugar for months of time at a
mm-hmm.
time.
Oh, yeah.
People go, oh, well, do you want honey in this? And I'm like, no, because you don't really need it. The fruit's enough. Like you have like a
mm-hmm.
smoothie with just fruit and it tastes like it has sugar in it. And things with
yeah.
milk taste like sugar because of the lactate has milk in it. So many
mm-hmm.
different things. Corn tastes like sugar. Carrots
yes.
taste like sugar. So you, it's kind of, as a matter of fact, I have a friend who makes tomato soup and instead of putting sugar in it, she makes it with carrots. Like you would never know. And it's so delicious. And it just tastes like
really?
Normal, you know, tomato soup. So it's, huh. it's very easy to substitute for that too. And we probably don't need those things either. Well, we're talking about
mm-hmm.
things we probably don't need, processed sugars and processed wheat. And that's about as intense
right.
as I can go. Cause I can't worry about every little thing or I'll just become neurotic
no,
and nobody needs another
yeah.
neurotic weirdo.
Right.
And it's good that you're out there talking about it and still being funny and being funny about it and not. Because I have a friend who is like a staunch vegan activist, and
oh,
I
yeah.
love her. But if I have to hear one more time about how every time you eat a burger, you commit murder, it's a lot. So,
well, I
and that the reason the world is horrible, that humans are all murder complicit, and it's like, I can't. You know, there's enough going on in the world. I can't start worrying about that, too.
Yeah. And it's you're not going to turn people's opinions with that. You know, you're not going to change their minds with that. You might. I mean, if you show them a video that just completely horrified them, but is that how you want the change to happen? You know what I mean? You don't want
right.
any change for it to be a lasting change. It has to be something you want to do. If you're horrified out of eating meat, eventually you'll get over that horror and probably start eating again. But if you really look at the reasons why, hey, you know what? I feel better. Hey, you know what? I have more energy. Hey, you know what? I've lost weight or whatever. And if you look at those things, and I just think that you have a chance of making a better chance of making a lasting change without being, you know, no one listens when you're shaking a finger in someone's face. They don't want to hear that. They don't want to hear what's
no.
coming out of the mouth that's shaking, that's, you know, being they're
no.
trying that finger.
Well, and that kind of extreme activism, right, is a lot of times
mm-hmm.
when people think that lesbians aren't funny because
yeah.
I think that that group is associated with a lot of the extreme activism, right, environmental stuff and human rights and women's rights and gay rights. But I mean, all these things are good, but I think if you take them to the extreme, then you start to get the stigma of not being funny. I know that for a long
right.
time, there were people in the spiritual community when I first moved into it that sort of kind of poo-pooed me a little bit, like, well, you know, psychics aren't funny and ministers aren't funny. And I'm like, well, if you
yeah.
can't handle that, then you're not in the right place with me because this is who I am. Because I think we learn sometimes from laughing. And I think humor is a way to get something across that you
oh, yeah,
want to get
yeah.
across that people can't
mm-hmm.
handle in a dramatic way, but they'll listen
mm-hmm.
more in a comedic way.
Mm-hmm. And you can paint a different picture of comedy, you know, even if it's just taking the opposite, like look what Stephen Colbert did. he was this, you know, his character on his old show was just this crazy right wing, you know, and the way he would put things, you would see the ridiculousness of it. And
yeah,
sometimes that's the best way, you know, to kind of.
I agree. 100%. I absolutely agree. So tell me a little bit about your show, because I'm going to be on it again on Friday, and I'm very excited.
You are. I know, I'm excited. It's called, well, actually, we're changing the name soon to Chat and Go, but right now it's still called the In-House Comedy Chat, and it is a talk show, but it's more than a talk show. We're energizing your mind, body, and spirit. So what I do is I start out with a monologue that's hilariously funny, because in my head, every single joke is going perfectly, and then I show some videos and clips of my performers, my friend, whatever it is they do, and then I interview them and chat with them. We should throw a couple more videos in there about stuff that they're doing or stuff they're working on. And then we've got a cool kind of a setup. So the monologue part of the show takes place at Cher's house, because I can. It's a green screen. So I do it in front of Cher's infinity pool. And then I go back for the third part of the show, and I take a walk on the beach. So I've got some beach footage, and I encourage the viewer to stand up and walk along with me, because it's true. Study after study after study, even something as simple as a brisk 20-minute walk a day can change your life. It can improve your improve your longevity, your heart, your blood pressure, everything. You name it, your mental status, it can improve it. So I try to take a 5-minute walk on the beach with them there while I either show a video, like for Women's History Month, I talked about or showed a video of some cool woman. And during Black History Month, we focused on a cool African-American person. So now it's just kind of a free-for-all with Betty Davis' birthday Monday. So we did Betty Davis thing in there. So I just kind of show some sort of fun clip while we walk and encourage a viewer to walk along with me. And then as I say goodbye, I encourage them to continue that walk for another 15 minutes around the house or wherever. So my thought is to get them up, to give them some positive information, to make them laugh, and then hopefully get them up and walking and moving around. Because as a sports person, I've always been, you know, I've always liked sports and athletics and cycling and doing whatever. So for me, it's always really uplifted my spirit. So I'm trying to bring that, you know, that sort of positivity into people's lives that they don't know it's so easy to
Fantastic.
Do, just get up and move, because we're all so freaking sedentary, especially now with the pandemic. So
oh
that's
my God. Yeah. Now we're like, oh, I have to walk to the bathroom? What the hell? Yeah, there's a pandemic on. I'm not walking to the bathroom. Does anybody know? I could die. I could get it from the bathroom could have the COVID. Yeah, any excuse now not to move. Yeah. We're not all as athletic as Jenny McNulty. You have the skinny Irish gene, and I have the fat Irish gene. I find there are no Irishmen that are anywhere in between. We're either really fat or really skinny. We're either Jack Spratt or his wife, and nothing in between.
You know? Well, there you go. I guess so. I'm a Jack Spratt. I'm a James Spratt.
I cannot wait to see you on Friday. It's going to be so awesome.
Likewise.
Tell people where they can
Likewise.
Find you online, my friend, and thank you for being here.
Thank you. Jenny McNulty fan. If you go to Facebook.com and you'll see – it's all one word, Jenny McNulty fan, and Jenny is I-E, so it's J-E-N-N-I-E-M-C-N-U-L-T-Y fan, all one word, and there it is, 1 o'clock, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, in the In-House Comedy Chat, and Sheena Madden will be
with us
on Friday.
Sounds good,
I'll see you then. That sounds good?
Thank you
all
so
right.
much,
thank you
friend.
So much.
Such a joy
Bye-bye.
To have you here,
Thanks.
And please come back and see me again, I would love it. Jenny McNulty, everybody, thank you. If you missed any of those links, liveparanormal.com. RaisingTheVibrationRadio.com. I'm Sheena Metal. I'm at SheenaMetalSpiritual.com. I'm available for private sessions and all kinds of things that you would want a psychic medium for. Go to my website, check it out, come and find me. I will also be here tomorrow at 6 o'clock every Wednesday doing my Haunted Playground show here on Live Paranormal, and Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday night at 9 o'clock I do live web series on Live Paranormal's video channel, which is facebook.com/theliveparanormal. Till I see you next time, my friends, seek peace, live in love, lead with kindness, embrace unity, and always, always raise your vibration. I'm Sheena Metal, and you know what? I love you all, and I'll see you next Tuesday at 5 o'clock for Raising the Vibration right here on the Live Paranormal Network.